In a marriage, in relationships, the thing that finally is tested, the thing that finally, it eventually, it cannot be faked. It cannot be duplicated. It cannot be imitated. And that's love. Now, the love that is talked about here is not all the other loves that we've talked about, all those other five words. They're all other four words. They're all used to get us. They're like bait. What?
So the old bait and switch.
No, it's the bait the hook so that they'll be fishers of men. I mean, but again, to be a fisher of men means that what happens to the fish when you fish? The fish dies. That's something that modern religion has forgotten. Praise God, I'm going to make you a fisher of men. Let's go make some well, what happens when you die? And you're caught.
They just like to keep them on the stringer and leave them in the water. So they like
that's what a great analogy.
And then the snakes come along and eat them, and the turtles take bites out of them.
What I said in that,
all their fish.
What I said in that that congressional thing, that I said that we're not fishers of men, we're keepers of a very small aquarium filled with dying fish. But you've all been around enough to know that your words about love can't cut it anymore. That something has, some transaction has to take place that's tested in time. Because all of your words and all of your grand ideas and images have failed and will fail if they haven't yet about what love is and what a relationship is and what, I mean, it'll die, it'll fail. It's a sure bet. All of your how-tos, all of your, you know, all of them, they cannot sustain. The test of it is this 1 Corinthians 13, the way of love. This is the way of the word love. It here is agape. Agape cannot be faked. It can be faked for a minute. You know, it can look like it. That's why I get so furious here about the people that love to help. There's all kinds of people in this community, that, especially in one particular Bible study, that like to have a cause. And they have a cause as a person, usually. But they always, you know, pretty soon they run out of patience and they abandon the cause and they throw away the person. Now, that's not love. That's simply a sick way of consuming someone else's flesh so that you can have a purpose in your sick life, in your fruitless life. You understand? So you go, you see somebody in need, and you go help them a minute, and you go, and you get real righteous about how people aren't treating this person right, and this and that, and this and that. And then what happens? By and by, that person doesn't meet one of your standards, and you toss them. It proved that your words were a lie. It proved that your sincerity was had another agenda. It was another thing going on within you. It may have shocked you to find out that you needed that sustenance. You needed to eat and consume that flesh in order to have purpose in your life. I don't think it goes on here, but you know, some people consume the flesh of their parents in order to have life, if their parents are famous or wealthy or something. Some people consume the flesh of their children in order to have purpose. But in a marriage, what happens normally is you consume the flesh of each other. And you do it, that's why this thing of 7 years is so important, because The idea is it's 7 years is how long it takes to consume each other's flesh, and there's no flesh left. And what happens then? Well, let's go to 1 Corinthians 13 and see if we can see some. Huh?
So when they get the 7 year itch.
Well, that's the longest it can last.
Does that have anything to do with the seven mountains that you mentioned?
It's just always seven is a completion. It's complete. It's the end of whatever. So, you know, the goal of life isn't the Sabbath, the seven, the end. The goal is the resurrection, the new. So the 7 year, I mean, it can maybe only take 7 days to consume. You know, that's a blessing. Then you can see the resurrection. All right. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And isn't it funny how quickly you're able to recognize that now? The voices that you used to listen to, remember, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden there's a tinny sound to those voices that you used to think was really neat. You know what I mean?
This is a side bit. I was listening to Steve Bartlett give his acceptance speech. It was so bad. I wish, probably, because it was just so bad.
Yeah. Or, you know, I used to, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's political speeches or some great orator or
love songs
on the radio. I mean, you know, if you see that they're really talking about the revelation of Christ, then you can see Christ as all and in all. But if you see them as the end of themselves, I mean, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. That's why what happened when I was on the radio, I was convicted by that verse, because I was saying all these wild things on the radio, but it was not tested. It was just a Lone Ranger thing. It was a long time ago.
And there's the version that says charity, not charity.
Charity is agape. Agape is love. That's the only word that deserves to be called love. Agape. Charity is the is the King James version of that. And that in this segment, otherwise, it's not consistent. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity or love, it profiteth me nothing. Now, let's begin now to see what this thing is. It said all these verses, it says, then though I have not this it, when it profited me nothing, it's worthless. So we've seen what it is, and now let's see what it is. What is it? Now, for the next few verses, it defines agape. First of all, agape suffereth long. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth nothing. Love vaunteth not itself. Love is not puffed up. Love doth not behave herself or itself unseemly. Love seeks not her own. That's where you're finally going to get it. I mean, love doesn't seek for itself. That's just impossible to fake. It just isn't possible to fake. Love doesn't seek for itself. Love would never in a million years say, either in thought, in word, or in deed, well, if she loved me, she'd really do this. Or how can you do that? How can you say that if you love me? If you say you love me. In other words, you understand the transaction isn't possible in love. Love doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked. Love thinketh no evil. Now what that means, it doesn't, what it means is it never suspects evil. It never suspects the evil. Do you understand that? It doesn't. Don't put your own definitions of what that means there and say, oops. Love doesn't suspect
like
evil.
I always know that we're okay when that, it's like when that doesn't happen, that's when I know the most. So we're okay.
Right. Yeah. The benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I've probably had 5 or 6 dreams or visions or whatever where I've heard the question asked of me, why would you expect?
Yeah.
Well, my mind probably does that more than anybody in this room expects the worst or expects.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
I expect people all the time.
I mean, when it comes right down to it, it's like even at work. Okay, here comes the boss. He's coming into my office. He looks mad. It's me. You know what I mean? Okay. And he's just like, oh, I feel terrible today. Shh. It always happens.
That'd be like not expecting the worst
from
somebody, or not expecting.
Or in the situation.
I just expect people. It makes you real combative. All kinds of things.
Paranoid, yeah.
Combative, mean, judgmental,
huffy.
Insensitive.
I remember you talking a long time ago about. I mean, not that long ago about. Not being so cynical, you know, and you read something about, you know, what was it? Something about always thinking good. I think it was in Philippians. Or
we're going to see that in a minute.
Okay. You're reading ahead.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
But no, I mean, it does. It changes the way you think.
It's not easily provoked. That means... That word there, it's a great word in the Greek, but it has to do, the provoking has to do with, it has to do with you don't get upset when somebody questions your motives. What are you laughing at?
She's blushing.
Rude skin.
Busted.
Busting.
You don't get upset when someone questions your motives. Rejoiceth not in iniquity.
It goes with expected evil, thinking evil.
Well,
it means you're right. When you see iniquity, you're right.
And you're happy that you saw it.
You're happy because you're right.
I knew it.
I knew he was evil. Uh-huh. I knew it wasn't going
to happen. I knew it was going to happen.
I'm right.
I told you so.
You should have thought ahead.
I told you so.
I told you this would happen. I hate
to be the one to
happen.
Say it, but I told you so.
It's like my but it's starting to hurt. So guilty.
How do you want to go? Let me up for air.
See, I had just given you, I was about to give you about 3 blessings for that thing you wrote.
We roll the tape back.
And make it not happen.
See, I knew you shouldn't have said that. Just listen to me.
But it also rejoiceth not in iniquity, has as its component
the idea that you don't get pleasure from someone's problems, from someone failing, from someone, even if it's your worst enemy, you don't take pleasure in that they would fail. You understand that?
I guess I'm having trouble because everything works for good. God's in control, and He, by definition, is good.
Yeah, well, everything in the womb, everything when the womb works for the good, but there's birth and afterbirth. I don't want to be part of the afterbirth, I want to be part of the birth.
Well, I mean, you can say, okay, adversity's going to happen to your worst enemy, but you don't have to say, yeah.
Well, let me give you an example. You know, I really don't want Tilton to lose all that he's got. I don't want him to become, I want him to start preaching the cross. Yeah. I wouldn't want him to be in jail. I mean, at any given moment, I may act like, I mean, something, you know, the idea of him just wondering what the hell happened to him. He's not going to know what happened to him in a few weeks. I mean, he's going to just blow. I mean, how in God's name did they know that? How did that happen? Where? What? They're going to. And so. What?
Big setup. You might big,
I'm sorry.
Really.
Knockdown.
It's the big knockdown.
Why are you staring at
me?
Going bowling.
I was just
bowling for evangelists.
Bowling for Bob.
That's good. I like that. Bowling for evangelists.
It's a strap. One left standing.
No, but I really don't. I don't want him to go to jail. I don't want him to lose his money. I don't want him. I don't. None of those things happen. What I want for him, what I want is for him to start preaching the truth.
I said.
Well, I mean, it would be wild.
It'd be great. I made a mistake.
You were seeing good advice with Peter Reeves.
It's, anyway. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Or with the truth. It's a better way of saying that. Again, the truth here is the idea you rejoice. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is good for nothing but to throw. The truth here is the salt. The truth is that component of eternity in your life. Now, to rejoice in the truth means to rejoice in eternity. Can you understand that? To rejoice in the idea that eternity is seen in another arena, or eternity is spoken in another place. But you understand, you can't fake this kind of stuff. The pettiest people, the most boring, petty, sort of, you know, just sort of really hateful people are the ones that are in the most fundamental of the holiness groups of the Christians. I mean, I have never seen as a group, because they're trying to fake love, and what happens is that it causes this, in order to get by with it to themselves, they have to make these barriers so small that pretty soon everything is their enemy. And they only, pretty soon they only, everything is exclusive instead of inclusive. You know what I mean? Once you begin the process of trying to have, of the holiness movements, and they, you know, the Kenyon is a modern day founder of the holiness movements. You know, and I mean, man, I mean, can you believe what that must be like to constantly be trying to get it right? And to try to get it right with a whole bunch of other people who are trying to get it right, and you suspect that they've gotten it right and you didn't. And so there's this, oh my God, I've got it. And the constraints and the world and your structure, your world has become so structured that you can't see it anymore. And pretty soon you believe the lie. What is the lie? The lie is I'm separate from life and I have to do something.
For a long time, I felt like the whole world knew what was going on, and I didn't. And it was like I always felt like I was behind, and now I just had to, you know, catch up and think through, and, you know, oh, yeah. And then go home and go, the hell was it?
Yeah.
Because I remember Liz was, I mean, I was in that state again pretty bad, and I told Liz that, and she said, Crystal, she said, I have to tell you, everybody doesn't know what's going on, you know, it's just, that's bullshit. You know, but even still, sometimes I can fall into that pit, and it just feels awful. I hate it.
Anyway, what happens when you fall into the pit, or the propensity to do that, is like it's only there to be given, because that's like the enzymes of the body. If it's not given, then it'll become the instrument to separate you. If it's given, it'll be the instrument to bring us all together.
It's like somebody said that, like, the body will just takes what it needs and then just throws out the rest.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like the food we eat.
Okay. This is the one that gets you. This is the one, if none of the other things have gotten you, this one will just smack you right upside the forehead, or in the middle of the forehead. Love bears all things. Love bears all things. Yeah. If that one doesn't get you, the next one really will. Love believeth all things.
How can that be?
Love beareth all things, love believeth all things. You understand what we're reading here? We're reading a revelation of a person. And the person is Christ. And this is the aspect of Christ. This is the only personality portrait of Christ in the Bible. This in Isaiah 53. Now, we can act like or imitate portions of this. You understand? At any given moment, we can imitate like we're doing something. But when you understand that agape isn't an adjective that can be added on to you, that agape is a noun that's a person. It's a proper noun. Another name for agape, another name for this thing that's being described, this it, is Jesus Christ. It can't be you. You can only look at this and see what you're not so that you can turn from self. You understand that?
Agape doesn't do these
things. Agape doesn't do these things. Agape is these things. But your mind, remember, we've talked that the only thing we are to be, broken bread and poured out wine to the world. But the bread cannot have leaven. The only breads that can be used for matzah are breads that have the capacity to be leavened. So we have the capacity to think we can do each one of these. We have the capacity to get righteousness out of every one of them. But when we see them in whole and we don't study half scriptures, we get convicted. And what happens in conviction? We turn from self and repent. And then we then pick up the cross and he's there. That's life. That's what makes life fun and exciting, and you can afford to prophesy. The deadening aspect is the minute you try to be it. The instant you try to do it, the instant you try to be it, then you've deadened the process, and my God, it's going to, you know, you just gotta go through all this shit, and finally, eventually, your worst fears come upon you, and then you say, oh my God, and then you turn from self, and then you can. But it was always that far from you. This is the danger. This is the. Especially in our relationships. This is where it's seen most clearly is in a marriage. And if it isn't spoken, if the acting is so great that you've tried to act like you're doing this stuff. What every time you act, it's like you put a layer of plastic on the gem. A That's another layer, and another layer, and another layer. Some of, you know, it's going to take a hydrogen bomb to blow away everything except that pearl of great price. All of the layers of a lifetime of acting like you knew what you were talking about, or acting like you were trying to get it right, or acting like you should, this is how I should be, or wondering whether or not I should do this or this, it's going to explode. Love beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never fails. Love never fails. Love never fails, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. When I became an adult, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part. Then shall I know, even as I am known. And now abideth faith, and hope, and charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity.
It's a wild word. It says, for I shall know, even as I am known. It's almost like everybody always says, well, how do I know if it's Christ? And we say, you never know. But others see you. I mean, it's like at that point, you will see him, and that's all you'll see.
Yeah. You understand that? How much easier it would have been if God would have put your eyes on your fingers here? Mm-hmm. You don't have your eye here? I'm serious, think about it. First of all, your eye could have looked at each other. The eye could look. You could look behind you. You'd have one eye look that way and one eye look that way.
It'd still be tough with shampoo, though.
Daryl, must be some good art.
That's true.
But you understand that the reason that the eyes are where they are, it's not designed well at all. I mean, just think about it. If an efficiency engineer were going to design a human being, it wouldn't look like we look. You got that?
Eyes on the front.
The idea that, oh, God made us perfect. He didn't make us perfect. That's stupid. I mean, even Ed could have designed a better man. I mean, think about it. If for what? I mean, my God. It would be easy to create. If I'm God, I'm going to create something that doesn't denigrate with time. I'm going to create something that gets great wisdom in the passage of time. I'm going to get something that creates something that makes get strong with the passage of time. I'm going to create something that can I can look back in my head if I want to.
Like spiders with eight eyes.
Something doesn't drop dead in 3 days without a drink of water.
Oh yeah, I mean something that wouldn't have to eat. Somebody definitely wouldn't have to poop.
Right? He'd be like a Gila monster with fingers on its eyes.
Yeah.
Don't have to sleep.
Don't have to sleep. Don't have to eat. Well, yeah, you hear me? This stuff about God has created man perfect is bullshit. It's taught by Pharisees. God created man perfect to do what he wanted, which was to cause you to come to the end of yourself and see Christ. And the way, the perfection, one of them is the eye. It cannot see itself unless it's looking in a mirror. Now, that's why you see through a glass darkly, because the glass darkly is seeing through the glass so you can see in the mirror. Now rip the silver nitrate off the back and look it through the glass and see Christ is all and in all. Faith is like your eyes. It never sees itself. What modern religion has done is made faith a commodity that only sees itself. It's evil beyond comprehension. You know, I just crushed. I mean, he came in all concerned about somebody, which is his usual ploy. And he's been eating all this great flesh, and now it doesn't taste good anymore. So I told him, you're hopeless. I said, God has not chosen you. You're not one of the elect. You're a vessel of wrath, not a vessel of mercy. You're appointed to destruction. You're cursed.
God.
Wake up, Jim. Now get out of here, rascal.
That's essentially what I said.
I'd be praying I'd wake up screaming.
Of your father the devil, and just as the devil sought his own, that's all you're capable of doing. You're appointed unto wrath. You're a vessel of wrath, not mercy. It's impossible for you to be saved. That's pretty heavy thing to say to somebody. And I said it in a like very concentrated way. What?
It was the laser beam from his eye.
What?
But it was the only way to cause him to see, to stop trying to be something, so that he could see that he was cursed, but then at the same time see that Christ became the curse for him. To see that he was the vessel of wrath, and Christ drank the cup of wrath for that. To see that he was appointed to destruction, but Christ was resurrected. To see that his name isn't in the Bible. Jesus Christ's name is in the Bible. But I had to lead him around first to get him to understand it. I mean, he had to emotionally understand he was cursed. Otherwise, the resurrection is a meaningless thing. It's something you try to emulate. Have you ever tried to be like Jesus? Yes, you have.
Tragic.
All of you. Yeah.
There's a little exercise you can do where you can kind of see that mirror. It's what you do is you put your name in the place of everywhere it says charity. For example, Jack suffers long and has come. Jack does not envy. Jack does not behave rude.
As he smacks you.
Oh, leave Jack alone.
No, if I were you, I'd let that one go.
No, I have not.
What about Philip is not unseemly?
Well, bottom line is, that this book, as in all the law and the writings and the prophets, testifies only of him. In John 5, for those of you who want to go look this up later, John 5, 39 and 40, it says, you search the scriptures, for in them you think you find principles of eternal life, but you fools, they are they that testify only of me, and you won't come unto me. This isn't the manufacturer's handbook. Religion is wrong. This is the revelation of Jesus Christ. And as you see him, you shall be like him, for you shall see him as he is. You cannot see him
trying to be like him. If you see him trying to be like him, if you are trying to be like him, you are the subject of your sentence. And here. Do you see how the mystery of language is wonderful? Why things are adjectives and why they're nouns and why they're verbs. A sentence in the alphabet only has this one, its only function. All of the words of the universe, all the language structure of the universe, has as its only function to make Jesus Christ the subject of the sentence. Again, I say to you, if you're in a relationship or if you're married, stop trying. Give up. Stop acting above all things. And that's the words that I would say to Terry and Susan. That's what we talked about this morning in Bible study.
You know, I was talking to Matt on the phone this morning, and talking to him, I kind of got a little afraid of him coming home. And I don't know why. Maybe that's it, though, that I've forgotten how to act,
and
I don't know what it's going to be like, you know? Excuse me.
It might be great.
Oh, I'm not saying it's going to be awful, it's just
it's also real rather than...
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, since my body really hurts, I'm going to call it a night unless you have something to talk about. Okay, we next gather on the eighth day.
Yay!
I exhort everybody to eat a large meal on the mid to late afternoon. We meet here, well, actually at the Rutledge's at 5:15. We go... There'll be enough people to be late, but please don't let it be you. Let it be another group. We'll steal a bride, and then we'll go on the dark bus to
party.
And if you've never been to one of these, if you've never been to an 8-day wedding, you're in for a shock.
Wear comfortable shoes.
Yes, don't wear high heels. Take it big. Anybody have anything else? Any questions? Everybody understand perfectly?
We're going to miss the bus.
Nobody better miss the bus.
The bus is leaving at 6:30.
No, that's not a good idea to miss the bus. That's like the door closing and then there'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth.
This is the story.
Okay.
Part, no,